Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker. I have Shirley Carter, my co-host.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening.
I'm excited to be here with you once again. And I tell you, Shirley, I have been so troubled. It's April 28th, and I've been so troubled all day regarding the incident, the rioting that's going on in Baltimore.
That rioting and everything that's going on, it's like it's a up, you know, it's like an unrest that so much, you know, has been going on throughout the whole states, United States, and it's like this is the final one, the final straw that broke the camel's back, and you got a lot of young people that are very, very angry at the situation as far as they don't have answers. There's a lot of questions. There's so many that they're frustrated. They're overloaded. Their minds that they've snapped. And, you know, it's something that I saw coming from all the other things, from Trayvon to Michael Brown to the young man that was in Ohio, that was the kid that was in the and in the park and everything. And it's just like so much is going on. And Val, what do you think? Because you're from New York area, and this is close to New York, and with the stuff that happened in New York, and now Baltimore.
Well, you know, I've been troubled with this because, you know, a few years ago, back in 2010, my son was part of an incident such as this. Dan Roy Henry was shot down by a police officer, and simply by following instructions, he was doing what the police officer asked him to do, move his car. And then he proceeded to jump on the hood of the car and shoot point blank in the car. And when my son and his friends went to try to give aid after the police had dragged him out of the car and just left him there on the ground to die, my son was trying to give him CPR, and the police started beating on him and his other friends, and he was like, I'm certified in CPR. And they were like, you're not certified, you don't know what you're doing, and nothing's wrong with him. And he says, man, he's bleeding, he's hurt. And the police officers was like, you know, you shoot point blank in the car, and then you're going to tell them that, no, he wasn't shot, he wasn't hurt, but yet he's bleeding all over the sidewalk. It is, you know, I'm just speechless when it comes to the assault on our young black men. But, you know, in spite of all of this and the situation that is at hand, we must act civil. We must, you know, walk and act as Dr. King did when he marched through the streets regarding our rights, our civil rights. And he did it with nonviolence. When we go into communities and destroy our own businesses, destroy our own homes, it is not the way to go, because at the end of the day, we lose out. It takes time to recover what we tear down, and they're not in a hurry to restore what we have destroyed. So, you know, those that are listening, the parents that are listening, and young people that are listening, violence is not the way. Yes, we're outraged. Yes, we're appalled at the treatment that we've been given after all these years of being set free and being able to work on jobs and get education and get income. We still have this battle to fight where we're not equal as human beings do what we want to do in public. And now I don't know what this young man was doing. Only thing I know, as reported by the news, is he was unarmed and he was not confrontational. But yet he is dead. And yes, we're outraged, but violence is not the answer.
No, it's not. And to add a little to that about what he was doing, from what the reports that have come out, is that he was standing on a corner and they suspected him of being involved in earlier criminal activities, but they had no proof. But some type of word exchange took place and when he started to run. But he was placed, they're finding out that he was placed in the back of what you used to call a paddy wagon, but not secured in the wagon. And that the driver, the police officer that was driving, took him on what they call a nickel ride, where you ride over speed bumps and everything, and you hit on your brakes suddenly, and you take off fast. And by the time they got him to the precinct, that he was unable to move at all. And they, when they got him to the hospital, found out that 80% of his spine was broken. So it's a horrible thing that happened to be such a young man. Even whatever crime that was committed, no one deserves to be treated like that. And I think that's a lot of the part of the frustration that's going on, from what I'm hearing from even the mayor in there, that they're trying to get to the bottom of all of this. But peaceful demonstration speaks loud. You don't have to, I agree with you, Val, you don't have to destroy and resort to violence, because it distorts and take away from the value of what you're trying to bring to their attention, to government, city government and state government, about the changes that need to take place. A lot of people don't realize that the change start within your city level government, and then it goes to your state level, then it goes to your federal level. But by being disrupted and destructive, you have now changed the narrative that is no longer focused on getting the answer for the young Foster for his death, Foster Gray for his death, but now it's focused on the destruction and the rioting and everything. So you have taken away the value of your protest by going violent with it. So there's a lot of power in nonviolent protests. When they see the numbers and they see they're all standing for one cause, they get more attention than the negative attention of all of this violence and rioting. So now it's who's going to clean up the mess?
And yeah, you know, evil prevails when good men and women do nothing, but it is how we do it is going to determine the outcome for us all. And, you know, tonight we have Rashida Jackson, who's joining us. She is going to be a new author of a book called Empowered by His Purpose. And I think it's fitting for her to talk about that because, you know, we have so many people trying to find their way through. We had Dee Thompson last week. She talked about purpose never dies. But you know, like this young man who lost his life, where does that all fit in? How does that jive? How does that all come together? Because I believe that people are taken before their time. I was talking to one of our speakers a couple of days ago, and her son was 14, and he passed away. He was outside playing basketball with his father, and he just collapsed, dropped dead, didn't have any medical history of heart trouble or anything like that, but yet he was taken away. And I was talking to his mother, and I reached out to her, and I, you know, gave my condolences, and I said to her that, you know, even though he left here, I'm sure that he did not go prematurely, although we would have wanted him to be here a lot longer. And she says, you know, you're absolutely right. She says, I learned more about my son since he's died than when he was alive. She said that she had no idea that he had set up the anti-bullying at his school. He spearheaded that, and the work that he was doing in the community. You know, they were leaders, pastors in the church, but she was saying that her son had did so many things and spearheaded so many organizations that when he died, it was like people from droves, from different communities, all came together to honor him. And I said that, you know, his purpose, I said, that lets you know his purpose was done. He made an impact in those 14 years of his life. He was living a life of purpose. So, Rashida Jackson, how are you this evening?
I'm great. How are you?
I am absolutely wonderful. You're a motivational speaker, an entrepreneur, and you were a teenage parent and a victim of sexual and domestic abuse, but yet you found your footing. You were able to stand upright and walk this out to live your purpose. What does that look like for you?
It's truly amazing, and I take no credit for it because it was a village that really brought me to the point that I'm at now. And I know that it took a lot of determination, a lot of tenacity, and it took a lot of grit and just being determined to not be a statistic. And just speaking to what you guys are talking about with Baltimore, this is the mindset that our children have to have, that they're not going to be a statistic, that they're going to live life on purpose like this 14-year-old that you were just discussing.
Yeah, so as you tell us about the process, what was it like? You said you were a teenage parent. How old were you at that time?
I was 16 years old when I had my first daughter, and I was in high school, actually, in the ninth grade going into the 10th grade. And it was very disheartening, and I was so fearful and ashamed of all of it because it was in an era in the 90s when teen pregnancy was at an all-time high. But I grew up in the church, and unfortunately that was the place that I was shunned the most, and I had the most uncomfort there. So I turned to what I knew, and that was my books, my friends, my home, and basically trying to figure it all out.
Okay, and figuring it all out, how was that process? What did you do to kind of get a hold of yourself, even though you found yourself in that situation? Because there are a lot of young people right now getting pregnant. You know, we had a guest on the show last year, Dr. Lavinia Allen, and she had her first child at 14 years old. And she talked about that stigma and the things she went through. But there are a lot of young people that are getting pregnant at 13 and 14 years old. How were you able to handle that?
At first it was very difficult, but I just determined within myself, first was accepting and deciding that this child had a purpose and that her life needed to come forth, because the first thing that came out of the mouth of everybody around me, shockingly, was you need to have an abortion. Why? Because you're a straight-A student. You're on the cheerleading squad. You're in the beta club. You're in student government. You have all of these things going for you, and the first message that I heard was your life is ruined. And one thing that I learned through that process is that when someone speaks negative to me, I had to learn to use it for fire. So I went into the mode of, I'll prove you wrong. That was the very first thing, I'll prove you wrong. So then I determined within myself that I had to work twice as hard, that I had to make straight A's, that I had to go to college. It did not matter. This child had a purpose, and she was going to be born, and she would not be an obstacle for me. And I just took all of the negativity, all of the words, all of the shunning, the stones that went through, and I used them for fire to fuel the purpose that was to come forth.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, I don't have that fire. I don't have that tenacity that you're talking about. You know, I can't take the naysayers, and I just want to get out. I just want to end it all. So what would you say to an individual who's facing adversity as that?
don't give up. Don't stop, because no one can stop your purpose but you. No one can change your situation but you. No one can bring everything into scope, into focus but you, and you have to live for that child. I became determined that my life had to speak volume for her life. I had to become a parent. I had to grow up. I had to become who she needed in her life, because I couldn't just leave her to grow up with no example. And I wanted to be her hero. I wanted to be her role model. I didn't want her to look to anyone else, and I was determined that she would not go the route that I went.
That's powerful. I know, you know, as far as having children at a young age and stuff, I had my first daughter when I was 23 years old, and it was hard, and I was married, but it was a hard thing because I was not around my parents, my mother, or anyone to show me or tell me what to do. So how was that for you, raising her, you know, being immature?
Well, what happened for me right from the beginning, the first thing was, no, I'm not going to help you, and you did this. And, you know, I went through the whole thing with, you know, it was kind of like a blame game. And then all of a sudden it clicked in everybody's mind that I was not going to stop. I wasn't going to stop. I was going to school consistently. I was coming home with consistent grades, even with a belly that was growing. And with that, it sparked an insight in my village, which was my aunt, my mother, and even my daughter's father. His mother stepped in, and they all put the hands to work. I would go to school at that time in the morning from 7 to 3 and sometimes 5 and 6 in the afternoon, because I jumped right back into cheerleading. I got right back active at everything that I was doing. And my aunt would keep her from 7 to 3, and then she would leave her with me. I would come home to do my homework, and I would keep her at night. Then there were other days when his mother would pick her up at midnight and take her home with her and bring her back at 4 o'clock the next day. And then the same thing with my mother. There were times where she would take her for weeks so that I could do exams, or so that I could go on trips or participate in debates or whatever it was that I was doing. And they became my village. They put their hands to work because I was determined to work. When you step out and you do something for yourself, others will come along to help you. But you've got to show them, you have to show them that you're determined and that you're going to do something about the situation.
And that's what a lot of individuals aren't willing to do, is to put in the work. They want everything handed to them. And one of the things I like that you said was that I was determined not to give up. So is that where Empowered by His Purpose was birthed?
That is absolutely where it came from. You find the power within yourself to do what it is that you're called to do when you look back and you realize that every step, every obstacle in your life had a purpose. It either was a lesson learned, it was a lesson learned for you, or it was fuel to your fire. It was something that should motivate you today. When we look back, many times we look back at our past and we are like, oh, you know, that's the worst thing. And then some people want to live back there. But instead of living back there, we have to realize that it's empowerment for our total purpose is what we've gone through in our past. I was just telling someone about an hour ago that you can't worry about what you're going through. You just got to know that this is for somebody else. Whatever you've gone through in your life is going to be a message. It's going to help the next person if you just shout it out. And understand that it's total empowerment for you if you use it.
Those of you that just tuned in, I'm talking to Rashida Jackson. She's a motivational speaker and entrepreneur, and she is talking about Empowered by Her Purpose, which is a book that will be coming out this summer. Shirley, as we're talking to Rashida about teenage pregnancy and things, we see that she was also a victim of sexual and domestic abuse, which we all are very familiar with ourselves.
Oh, yes. And one of the things that, you know, it took me back to was when you were speaking, Rashida, it took me back to my sister who was 15 when she had her first child. Well, actually ended up being her only child. And to hear how the family became a village to help you, I myself became her village because my mother died before the birth of her child. And I became her village for 2 years because she had two more years of schooling to do, that I raised her son while she went back to school. She, you know, after 2 weeks, I sent her right back to school so she could finish. And it does take a village. That saying is, you know, it's an old saying, but it does take a village and it can be done. And to hear that your purpose was birthed out of that, you know, that is awesome. And when you find your purpose. Now, I have a question for you as far as during that time, and I heard you mention the father's mother and everything. How did the father fit into the picture at this time?
He was about as, rest his soul, we both were teenagers, and he was in school as well. But he was very involved in her life, he was up until his passing in 2013. But he was very involved in her life during the times that he was there because we dealt with some identity issues within himself, and he spent some time locked up. He spent some time in trouble. But no matter where he was, his parents were hands-on and they were involved. But he was very, very, very much involved with her life. You know, there whenever she was with his mother or she was at his house, then he was responsible for taking care of her. So we were kind of like teenage co-parents, you know, without the real, you know, without the marriage and being in the same house. She had both of her parents throughout her life.
Wonderful. And then it's not only co-parenting, but I'm hearing the part that in spite of being together, being married and everything, you were still able to co-parent her and still live your lives. And that's where a lot of teenagers and a lot of, even though not just teenagers, a lot of people don't have that support in raising a child. It just goes to show that you can co-parent and coexist in two different households, but still be able to come together for one cause, and that was for the cause of your daughter. And as a result of that, it grew you. You went from being a girl to your womanhood, is what I'm hearing you say. Even this finishing school and all the other activities and debates and everything, you had a full plate that the average woman doesn't even have after having a child. So your purpose, you found your purpose early. Now, when finding your purpose in everything, and you said you found it then, where are you now with that finding of it? Did you realize it then, or when did you realize that that was your purpose, that you had found your purpose?
Well, I realized it when my daughter began school, because I realized that she, first of all, was my purpose. But I remember, I go back to being a little girl, and my mother would ask me all the time, what do you want to be when you grow up? And up until the time I got pregnant, it was, I'm going to be a doctor. That's what I'm going to do. And I remember her asking me why. And my answer was to her, because I just want to help people. So once I got pregnant with my daughter, of course, one of the first questions was, well, how are you going to do that? How are you going to go to college? Because now you're going to have to go 4 years and then another eight. Then you're going to have to intern and all of these things. And it just, to me, those were all things that are telling me that I could not do it. And so I decided, okay, then I'll be a nurse, because whatever it is I do, I'm going to help people. So from a very young age, I knew that I was going to help other people. And it's just now in discovering my purpose that I'm going to help other people, but right now I'm going to help them because I'm going to show them how their life can be used to progress them into the next level.
Wonderful. And it's a good feeling to know your purpose.
I heard when I was at the Purpose Never Dies conference, I heard this guy say, you fall asleep with a dream and wake up with a purpose. And that was so powerful because of the fact that when we're young, you know, you dream about being something or somebody. You know, no matter where I was or found myself in life, I always knew that there was more. Even though I didn't quite understand what that more was, I knew it was something I was destined to do. You know, greatness is a choice, and we have to choose it. So in choosing it, we have to, you know, take those steps, those paths to embrace the destiny that was given to us from birth. Even though we don't understand it, sometimes our why becomes our purpose. Why is it that we're getting up every morning? Why is it that we're going out to work? Why is it that I'm going to this event? Why is it that I'm listening to this music? You know, why is why it has to be. And that kind of births us and leads us into that assigned place for us. So after you had your daughter, and so where did the sexual abuse come in?
That was prior to having my daughter. There were my mother, first of all, my mother raised me and my brother alone by herself. And there were times where she worked, I know, 20 hours out of a day. So there were a lot of times where we were either at our grandmother's house or we were left alone. And in my neighborhood, and many people don't know about it. In my neighborhood, there were people around, and we grew up in a very small place in the country, because I joked about that at the conference. We grew up in a very small place where everybody knew everybody, but there were people in our neighborhood that were much older. And because we were young girls, and I was one that was not attended to because my mother was working to provide so that I could do all the things that I was busy doing, there were times that these people were visiting at our home, and they would not be paying attention. You know, we'd be having a barbecue, and everybody would be outside, and there was a young man from our neighborhood. He must have been, I was less than 12, and he must have been in his 20s, and he would be in the house, come in the house with us, where me and my cousin and a few other girls were, and he'd be groping or pulling or putting our hands down his pants. And those were times where my grandmother was strict, like a straight, like you couldn't even say the word sex. She would fold up and just, she couldn't say anything because she was from that era where it was taboo. So there was no, I felt that there was no avenue or nowhere to go to say, you know, this person just touched me or this person just did that. Because I spent a lot of time growing up being told that I was fast or I was feeling out or I was this or I was that. And you start to, as a young girl, you start to believe those things. So that led to me accepting that that was the right thing for a young man to do or an older man to do to me, and I never told anyone.
Okay. Okay, now where did the domestic violence come in?
When I was in, funny, because I was young, so many things happened. But I was in the ninth grade. I determined within myself, I started thinking, because you hear the stories of your parents, your grandparents, when you're at gatherings, and you hear of the history of things and how they've gone. And I started to speak out loud, I will not be in a domestic relationship. I will not allow anyone to beat me or to hit me. But in the beginning of high school, in my ninth grade year in high school, I had a boyfriend, like most girls, and I was a cheerleader. He was on the football team, and he was very violent, and he began to beat me. And I was just in high school. I was 14 years old at the time, and there was one instance where we were out hanging out, and he was not there, but someone started to tell me, he's coming. You know, he's approaching. He's coming. He's coming in the room, and I began to get nervous because I knew that he was going to embarrass me or embarrass the people that were around me. And in that instance, he drug me out of a a dance at the armory where all of my friends and all of our people were, and he persisted to beat me. And at that point, after he fought me, he pushed me in a ditch and left me there. And it was
you
hours
were 14?
Before. I was 14 years old. And he pushed me down in a ravine, we call it a ditch where I'm from, into a place, and it had water and everything. And it was hours before I was able to change my clothes, you know, and he would always come back and say, you know, you made me do it, and I'm sorry, and, you know, you're beautiful, and I was just mad and these kind of things, and you shouldn't have been talking to this person. And I was 14 years old. But I clearly understood that it was a plot against my life because of what had gone on in the history of my family.
Mm-hmm, a generational thing.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, because I was wondering how all that came together when you sent me your bio. I was like, did all of this come together also? And be one thing, so I wanted to, like, kind of separate it through. But one of the things that I want to extract from that is, although you had all those adversities in your life, you did not let it stop you from becoming and being who it was that God wanted you to be. It has been said that those who fail to work toward the truth have missed the purpose of living. And that's one thing I find that individuals don't want to do is put in the work, fight for that dream. Whatever that dream is, you have to persevere and press against all the obstacles and things that come up against you, because things will come, things will happen. When I think about all the things that I've endured in my life thus far, but yet I'm still here, and that's because purpose has not been fulfilled. We're still here living and breathing because each day God blesses us with new mercies where we're able to say, okay, this is another day to change. This is another day to make it right. And in my book, Unlimited Possibilities, I talk about that because I came full circle knowing that all the things that I went through was for a purpose for this appointed time. I had no dreams of doing radio. I had no dreams of writing a book. I used to be terrified when I gave book reports at school. I was trembling and sweating, nervous and about to pass out, getting nauseous in the stomach, and now I speak before thousands. Who would have thought? So our path, definitely the lives we live definitely, you know, determine our outcome, where we are, and those people that we are supposed to connect, empowered by his purpose. We're often empowered to do things that we didn't even know that we can do until we actually find ourselves pushed up against the wall to do it. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we have to shout it out. We have to tell it. Teen dating, teen violence, it exists. We shun it and we say they're young and they don't know, but it began for my life then. And it starts the process, and it follows you into adulthood until you decide to stop it. Until you decide to stop it. And just unfortunately for so many of the women that we know, they don't get the opportunity to stop it. It stops for them. You know, they lose their life in this battle. But we have to wake up and we have to talk about it. We have to teach our young men how to be young men, and we have to teach our young women how to be ladies and what's acceptable and what's not. We have to do that as parents and as leaders, and this is where we are, all of us, in our purpose, is shouting it out to the mountaintop. These things are out there. They're not new. They're not old. They're here. They're facing us right now. And we have to be determined to fight for our young people.
You know, being that you went through domestic violence and teenage pregnancy, and I went through domestic violence, I hear, you know, some people may be thinking, so you mean to tell me that going through domestic violence pushed you into your purpose? Being sexually abused pushed you into your purpose? Would you be able to elaborate on that, Rashida and Shirley? I want to say one thing to Rashida, you know, before we elaborate on that, is when she talked about, you know, because I was sitting here too, tying it all in from the sexual abuse to the teenage pregnancy and everything, and then finding her purpose, that when she got pregnant with her child is what I'm tying in, that saved her life. Her life could have taken a whole different turn with the sexual abuse and the domestic violence. But when the pregnancy came in, she had a purpose. Your whole life shifted is what I'm hearing. And because your focus became your child and succeeding in life.
That is absolutely correct, that she became my life. She became my focus. Everything from that point on became about her. And into all the way into my 20s, things still occur, things still happen because I was not taught and I didn't know any better. And because I hadn't talked to anyone, I didn't know how to avoid certain situations. But I knew that God had a plan against whatever plot the enemy had made. God had a plan, and I had to just keep pressing. There were other instances of domestic violence in my 20s and after I had my son as well, but we look at it and we say, for me, it was use it as just like a mule that's thrown into a hole. Shake it off, keep stepping on it, because you're going to rise up, and you can rise above anything if you are determined. You have to work for it, and working for it meant working for my child. She had to become somebody in this lifetime, and it was up to me to make sure that that happened.
And that's
so she was your why.
Into what, right. That tags into what you asked us about, you know, these things in our life that happens, you know, because, Val, you know, I went through domestic violence as well, and these things that happen in our life, we find a new focus. We don't focus on that happens to us. We start to focus on things that are ahead of us, something else. We take our energy and place it somewhere else. I know I did for myself because I dealt with substance abuse, domestic violence, and those things, you know, but I took my focus when I had, you know, the substance abuse part. I had two young children, and when my son got sick with asthma and everything, and then I said, I've got to focus my energy on saving his life. I have mine, but I need to save his life. In order to save his life, I needed to get my life together. So I was able to, you know, be delivered, walk away from drugs, no treatment facility or anything. My focus became him. My purpose became helping him because he was only, you know, months old. He wasn't even a year old. Then, you know, 2 years old and 3 years old, all these hospitalizations. I had no time for those other activities that would take me away from here. My focus became on him and then my other children. So I had an older son, and then I had another younger son after that. So that became my focus, and then my purpose was born out of that. And that is helping people. And what did I still do today? Help people. So through the pain, through the suffering, and through all the negativity, there's that positive. And that positive part was having my children and finding my purpose. So if for every negative, there's a positive. And I had this conversation with my youngest son. He was like, Mom, for every negative, there's a positive. Nothing in life can operate without a positive. And if there's a negative in it, there's a positive in it too. We just have to connect to the positive side and keep pushing. So, Rashida, what I heard you say, and you can correct me on this, is that the negative things that were happening, your positive was your children and your daughter first at a very young age. And it, you know, took you into your purpose.
That's absolutely correct. If she had not been born, I say it all the time, had she not been born, I don't know if I would have ever stop going to the club or stop being in places that I shouldn't have been at the age that I was there. Out of all the positive things I was doing, there were so many negative things, because for some things to happen to you, you have to be in the wrong place. And she definitely saved my life. That you couldn't have said it better. I've said that thousands of times, that being a teenage parent saved my life. Absolutely. I agree 100%.
So you grew up in the country?
Yes, ma'am.
The reason why I'm saying that, because I was, yeah, I remember being in the clubs at 15 in the country.
Yes.
And partied and stuff, and I got my education on, though, but it was, oh, something to do, because there was nothing else going on besides, you know, the basketball and football games. The next thing was the club on the weekend.
That's
but
absolutely right.
Yeah, but even in that, in the country, now I was raised in New York, but then I finished my last 2 years of high school in South Carolina, and that's why I know about the country and the club. And I was like, yeah, that sounds real familiar. But, well, we wasn't having any of that in New York, but in the country we was able to do that. But even I look at my life as it transitioned from one point to another and all the things that I went through and I processed, that it was all for my purpose, the promise that was given to me. And sometimes adversity must come in order to give us that jolt into that next dispensation, because of the fact that a lot of times we get at ease in one spot. We get comfortable because we're familiar with things being peaceful as they are. But in order for us to get from A to B, sometimes it has to be a little turbulent to bring out that fight in us. And if we don't move willingly, sometimes we have to be pulled and dragged in order to get to the next level of power, the next level of great.
I agree with
that. When you look at all the great minds and people that have achieved goals, it wasn't without a fight. It wasn't without determination. It just didn't happen. If there was a fight that went on, I'm not talking about those people that were born with the silver spoon, which is wealth already at hand, because even they have an assignment in life. But I'm talking about us who come up that rough side and have to make a decision and choose between right and wrong choices. Like I talked about at the beginning of the show, that all the rioting and things that's going on in Baltimore, there's a choice. We don't have to participate in destruction. We can choose life, live our life, and take that young man's life and build on and learn what not to do and things that we could do. This young man's life was, even though it was taken, I don't know if it was prematurely or not, but what his life meant at this particular time, this that's going on right now, all of this coming together, it is for a purpose. It is going to push another level of government.
I totally agree. And our young people need to understand that if we take his life, or and the lives of Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown, if we take their lives and we say, now we're going to use what has happened to them for a greater purpose, then here we are carrying on their purpose. Here we are carrying on, because the end of a life can be the beginning of another purpose. We could take this and use it for positive. I do not agree with the destruction. I do not agree. If we could come together and be peaceable, then we could accomplish a lot more, because I believe that when it takes us to another level of government, it's going to take us to another level of control and of restriction. It's going to take us into a place of ushering in martial law and things where we think we have control of that we no longer do, because they're going to treat us more like animals because they feel like that's how we behave.
Exactly. Those of you that tune in, I am talking to Rashida Jackson, motivational speaker and entrepreneur. Rashida, how can individuals connect with you?
You can follow me on Facebook at Rashida Jackson. You can also find me on Instagram. I'm at Rashida Jackson as well as LinkedIn. The website is under construction at this time, but we will have that posted on those social media websites. And you can email me at bookrashida@gmail.com.
Bookrashida@gmail.com. Now, the topics that you cover are what?
I cover teenage pregnancy. I cover empowerment. I work with young women and healing relationship hurts, dealing with them and moving past the level that they are, because I believe that that's a place that we sometimes get stuck because no one's there to tell us. You know, people say get over it, but I work with young women in moving past the hurt. That is my passion in dealing and helping young people as a whole, but I focus a lot on young women and helping them to move into their purpose and what they're called to do. I show them how to start businesses and how to save money and those kind of things so that they can do positive things in their community and be present for their children.
Okay, so when you talk about moving past the hurt, is that part of the process?
It's definitely part of the process, and I take them through a healing process. I make myself available to them. I speak at empowerment sessions. I pray with them, pray for them, and I make myself available to them to basically coach them through moving past the pain and the hurt, and then finding what it is their purpose to do, how to use that
right
adversity.
Because a lot of times when you're in a relationship, man and female, you know, they say one way to get over it is to get into another relationship, but you can't get into another relationship if you've not been healed from the one you just left. So you take that baggage over into the next life and cause havoc, and then you cause havoc again because you move on because you're trying to figure it out. So that's part of the coaching you do, is handling that process, teaching them forgiveness, because that's one of the things that I believe is number one on anybody moving on is forgiving.
Definitely. And that is part of the process. I'm not a life coach by any means. I definitely work with individuals that want to work and want to move past. What I found, Dr. Val, is that most of the time, young women have children, and they're more focused on the relationship than they are on the children. So I start with them first there. Learn to focus on your children. Just because you were a teenage parent or you are a teenage parent does not mean that you can't attend a PTA meeting, does not mean that you can't become involved in your child's life. Your child's playing an instrument, you need to be a band parent. So I began to show them avenues of how they can take the focus off of what's going on. Forgive that person. They didn't know any better. But now focus on your children. Let them be your focus, because everything else will line up when you put the right things in perspective.
Okay. And that's powerful, because I know a lot of people have issues with forgiving where they've been. I even wrote my second book, Unveiling Secrets from the Heart, Forgiving Your Past to Free Your Future, because a lot of times we get stuck in our emotion because we fail to forgive where we've been in a time that we've vested. And then, you know, that person has moved on in another relationship and you spend more energy trying to get that person back even though they've moved on, because you just won't let it go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And meanwhile, your child, you're not checking their homework. Because you're more consumed about what John is doing on Facebook. And I'm a big believer in that. I meet so many young women who are out of focus. You don't even know, you know, a lot of them don't even know the principal's name at the school that their children attend. I find that absurd, you know, because they're out of focus. once you can forgive and move past that person, you can focus on the things that should be important. Finding ways to be free, to free yourself so that your child's not left unattended. I'm a big advocate for children and for education when it comes to them. And I just can't stress it enough. That pain and that hurt, you're going to use that for a purpose because another young lady's going to go through it. Another young man's going to go through it. Things are not going to change. So you have to use the negative for the positive. But focus on the things that are really important. Make sure that your children become productive citizens. Make sure that they make good grades. Make sure that you know who they're involved with, what their surroundings are about. Everything else will come into perspective when you have the right things in order.
Yeah, but that right doesn't look right or feel right when you're in the midst of that situation. I can vouch for that because
yeah.
I know when I was coming out of my divorce, it was so hard, it was so rough because so much time had went by. And, you know, you try to pull back the pieces and try to pull your senses together and get your footing back because you spent your whole life just existing and not living. And then the rug has been pulled out and you're like, okay, what do I do next? And then these people are looking at you. I'm talking about the children. They're looking at you like, okay, what's up? What's next? And we lose grip. We lose sight of what's real. And we don't live in the present. We're living in the past because we don't know what the future is because we're too afraid of what that purpose looks like, what that promise for our lives was. We have no idea what it was.
And I agree with that. I've been through some situations similar to that, and I can even attest that I'm going through some thresholds in my life right now. But I know that when I've gone through that, I came to Miami on the pretenses of being married. I was engaged before being married right now. And my whole world changed in an instant. 1,000 miles away from home, no family, he isolated me. And when that relationship was over, it took a lot to get my footing back. It took a lot of energy. It took a lot of letting go. It took a lot of tears. It took a lot of ice cream and chocolate. But faith
ice cream and chocolate.
Ice cream and chocolate. But faith came into play because where do you go when you can't go anywhere else? You have to.
That is right.
You have to. Go, you have to return to that foundation that was built, that was laid for you. There's nowhere, when there's nobody to pick up and call, nobody else to turn to, the only way to make it through is to return to your foundation, to your faith. And that's what it took for me. Oh, my God, my life was upside down. I was suicidal. I was going through, you know, I've taken my children away from their environment that they know. I've moved outside of my village. This man has basically ushered in the ruining of my life as if I hadn't gone through enough. But then it clicked. I went through a period of time where I moved 10 times in a year. I was homeless with two little children. But then I met a woman, and she said, come go with me. Come and go with me. I want you to meet my pastor. And faith came in to play. And when you realize who you are and who God purposed you to be, what he says about you, then you can take that pain and you can channel it in a different way. And you can forgive and you can let go and you can love and you can grow and you can move on. But it's a process.
Everything is a process, and sometimes that process hurts. In closing, what closing remarks would you give the audience?
I just want to say to everyone, one of the things that I heard you say was that I used to dream. Never stop dreaming. Always dream. When we are little girls, we dream big girl dreams. When we become big girls, we change our dreams and we minimize them. But if you keep dreaming, you'll go to sleep with a dream and you'll wake up with a purpose. Use your past as fuel to the fire. Go forth in what you're assigned and your purpose to do. Do what you love and you'll love what you do. It'll be a passion and not a job.
That is powerful.
Yes,
thank
it
you
is.
Thank you so much for joining us and tuning in with us for another Hot Topics from the Soul. And if you would, once again, let the listening audience know how they may connect with you. Rashida Jackson, who is empowered by her purpose, motivational speaker and entrepreneur.
You can follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Instagram, or you can email me at bookrashida@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from all of you, and thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Valerie and Shirley. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rashida. I really
love
appreciate
you.
For yes, thank you. Well, Val?
Yes, and I look forward to hearing the release of your book, Empowered by His Purpose. I'm sure it will be a bestseller because people are always looking for ways to find their footing. And I'm sure that this would be a powerful tool and a weapon for them to get to the next level of their greatness. So, Shirley, you have your event coming up. You want to tell the audience about that?
Yes, I would. It's going to be May the 16th. It's the Women of Vision Luncheon. It's our seventh one. It's a luncheon honoring breast cancer survivor. It's going to be from 12 noon to 3 p.m. at the Kellogg Center at MSU. That's in East Lansing, Michigan. You can also go to my Facebook page at ShirleyMCarter.com, and you can also go to Eventbrite for the Women of Vision Luncheon and get tickets. And if you'd like to be a vendor, you can also sign up to be a vendor at Eventbrite.com, the Women of Vision Luncheon.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. I look forward to seeing you there. I will be there a couple of days early, as I was last time, and hopefully you won't put
yes.
me to do too much work. I can have a little vacation.
No, I'm not going to try to do that this time. But I'm not making you any promises. I have some things in store for you, though. I think you will enjoy them. So I won't reveal those, but plan on having a really good time.
Okay, well, you know, this has been a powerful show. I thank you once again, Rashida Jackson, for tuning in and blessing us with Empowered by Purpose, and we look forward to seeing you, hearing my listening audience again next week. And remember that evil does prevail when good men and women do nothing, but watch how we're doing the something, because that's going to determine the outcome. Don't set us back by tearing up our neighborhoods, tearing up our homes, because at the end of the day, we're the ones who are going to have to rebuild it. This has been another Hot Topics from the Soul. Thank you for tuning in. Good night, and God bless.
Good night.